Hello, I'm Michaela, and welcome back to Lactation Station. Oh my gosh, so much has been going on this week, and I've been so busy, and I apologize that I didn't get this podcast out when I should have. My dog, who got sick last year, she almost died from an infection, has allergies, and her allergies decided to turn into a sinus infection. I've been fighting with that, and I took her to the vet on Friday, and she's finally back on the mend, but it was really scary there for a while. Okay, so we're going to talk today about, you know, different things, how certain foods or physical activity, you know, things in your lifestyle, how your lifestyle may affect your lactation journey. That's what we're going to talk about today. You know, do you avoid certain foods? Will physical activity make a difference? Will medicine you take affect your milk? You know, can you drink alcohol? You know, we're just going to talk about some of these different lifestyle things that could possibly have an effect. So first I want to start off with, if you started your lactation journey carrying a little bit too much weight for your height, trust me, you are far from alone. You're considered overweight if your body mass index, or BMI, is between 25 and 29.9. And your BMI reflects the relationship between your height and weight, and it's just an estimation of the amount of body fat you have. So you're considered obese if your BMI is 30 or greater. Now, there are a lot of apps online to help you calculate your BMI. You just put in your age, your height, and your weight. Mine was 23.3. And it also said that a healthy weight for my height is 111.2 all the way up to 149.0. Now, 111 for me would be far too thin. I guess the end of last year, I was at 153, and that felt exceedingly uncomfortable for me. And that's just, you know, a couple pounds over the 149. So right now I sit at about 140, and I think I'd like to lose about 5 more pounds, and I'll feel good about where I'm at. The problem is, when I first started lactating, I literally ate everything that was edible. I'm serious. I was so starved for calories. And since then, I've been trying to learn how to balance what I eat with the calories that I need to maintain my supply. Now, while you're lactating, you should not consume less than 1,500 to 1,800 calories per day. And most of us should stay at the higher end of this range. And although some women will require, you know, more calories per day, this all depends on how much your partner suckles, how often you pump. But studies show that going below this number can put your supply at risk. Okay, so how do we lose weight if you've gained too much, like I did, but you don't want it to affect your supply? One study suggested that short-term weight loss of 2.2 pounds per week is not a problem. That, you know, you think 2.2 pounds, that's not very much. It's going to take me forever. But you'd be surprised just how quickly that will, all of a sudden, you know, 2.2, 4 weeks in, that's 2, 4, 6. Pretty soon, the pounds are melting off and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, this really does work. The problem is, a sudden drop in calories can reduce milk supply. And sometimes you'll notice this when you're sick. Sometimes dehydration or medication can also factor in to reduce your milk supply when you're sick. And it has been hypothesized that a sudden calorie decrease can cause your body to go into starvation mode. And once it does that, it cuts all non-essential resources. And one of those is milk production. So, you know, you really have to be careful with that. I don't know about other people, but I absolutely do not recommend liquid diets, low-carb diets, fad diets, or weight loss medication, any of that stuff, while you're lactating. And according to my textbook, Breastfeeding and Human Lactation, it is noted that fad or rapid weight loss programs should be avoided because fat-soluble environmental contaminants and toxins stored in body fat are released into the milk when the caloric intake is severely restricted. Now, I read that, and I was unable to find a definition of what severely restricted was, but I expect that it's significantly under 1,500 calories per day, which they call that a modest intake, 1,500 calories. So, you know, just take that for what it is. Okay, so a couple of great tips for weight loss, things that started working for me. Some of the dietary changes that I made, I decreased my fat intake to 20 to 25% or less of my total calories, but I kept my protein intake up because you want to keep your protein intake high to prevent your loss of muscle mass. And another thing that I do is I spread my calorie intake out. Instead of eating two or three meals a day, and that's it, I eat three smaller meals, and then in between I have snacks. And that helps your body to not go into starvation mode if you're eating just a little bit, you know, throughout the day. Exercise moderately if you can so that you can burn more fat while keeping lean muscle mass. Resistance and weight training is a great way to build muscle mass, and a person with more muscle mass burns more calories even when resting. So if you burn so many calories from nursing, about 500 on average is what they say, then I wish somebody would explain to me why lactating women have a hard time dropping a few pounds. And why do the experts tell us the opposite is true? You know, they make it sound like as you go through lactation, because, you know, a lot of people say, well, that's when you nurse a baby. But your body doesn't know the difference. You know, if you have somebody that suckles or you pump, your body doesn't know that that's not a baby. So if you should be losing, you know, 500 calories on average per day, then why is it so tough? So this is what I found out with some research. During lactation, hormones are very different than any other time in your life. There's a lot of crap going on in your body that, you know, any other time is just not happening. And we experience a drop in testosterone. Yes, we have testosterone and estrogen, which are both fat burning. And then we also have an increase in prolactin. Now, prolactin, as we all know, is the hormone that causes your body to produce breast milk. Prolactin levels rise every single time your partner suckles you or you pump. And this is signaled by nipple stimulation. And that, you know, signals your pituitary gland to start releasing the prolactin. What does this have to do with fat loss? Well, the prolactin hormone is also linked, here it is, ladies, it is also linked to fat storage. It makes sense that our bodies would have put some sort of safeguard in place to protect our milk supply. And it seems to me that the prolactin is that safety net, because prolactin seems to keep us from mobilizing fat stores so that there's always an energy reserve in case of famine. The very thing that produces our breast milk is what prevents us from losing those few extra pounds. Because, you know, I had rapid weight loss and now I have like 5 pounds to go, and I cannot get it off for nothing, no matter what I try to do. This makes total sense to me. The prolactin is meant to keep your body from starvation mode by saving those energy reserves. Then, you know, it makes it harder to lose those few pounds that you have left to lose. And we must all remember, it's very important to remember this, that everyone is different. We all live our day-to-day lives quite differently. We have different hormone profiles and different genetics. How your body reacts to the changes that come along with lactating will most certainly be different from my body. However, you can see that as lactating women, everybody has a different scenario on their hands than the average woman when it comes to fat loss. I mean, we're working against hormones, you know, and all this other stuff that other people aren't dealing with. So if you have some weight that you're trying to lose, you know, just don't get frustrated. Just know that it's not you. Technically, it's, you know, the hormones that are in your body that's kind of protecting all of those fat stores, because they don't want you to go into starvation mode and not have any energy in reserve. All right, that's a little bit about if you're overweight. Let's talk about, what if you're underweight? If you're underweight, you know, this is a whole different scenario. And lactating can be difficult on your body. So, of course, you want to do everything you can to stay healthy. Probably the best step is to see a doctor. And you don't necessarily have to tell them that you want to lactate, unless, you know, that's up to you. I tell everybody, so, you know, it doesn't matter to me, who knows. I tell them at the hospital, I tell them at my doctor. If somebody at the corner store asks me, hell, I tell them, because I don't care. But, you know, not everybody has that same attitude. But that is the first step that you want to take. You know, you want to talk to your doctor, you maybe get a physical or a checkup, you know, talk to your doctor about different ways to gain weight. And then you can determine how much more you need to eat to gain the added weight that you're going to need. And one good way is to start by adding calories to things you already eat. Like if you're eating a salad, sprinkle cheese on it. Or whatever, sprinkle cheese on it. That's a great answer. Just sprinkle cheese on it. You just want to make your meals more caloric. Keep a food journal to estimate how many calories you're eating. To gain a pound, you need to eat 3,500 calories more than what you're burning. And that can be over a period of time, such as a week or a month. And a food journal can help you estimate how many calories you're consuming each day. So you'd write down the foods that you eat for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and all your snacks, and then add up the number of calories that you're eating. If you're not used to counting calories, you may need to measure your foods to accurately represent what you're eating. As an example, do you know what a serving of pasta looks like? Because I don't. I mean, if somebody said to me, what is a serving of pasta look like? I'd say, well, whose plate is it on? Is it on my plate or is it on my partner's plate? Because those two servings look very different. You know, it might help to have a scale or something that you can measure out those servings on. You can also use online calorie counters to help you estimate your servings. There's all kinds of apps online to help you count calories and all that different stuff. So then you would compare your caloric intake with the calories you need to maintain your weight. You need to be taking in more calories per day than what you need to maintain your weight. You take the number that you got from what you're eating and see if it is equal to or less than or more than the number of calories that you need. So if the calculator tells you need 2,200 calories to maintain your weight as a lactating woman, you'll need to take in 2,300 to 2,400 calories a day at least to gain weight. To gain a pound, you're going to need to take in an extra 500 calories a day. That's the equivalent of adding 1 to 2 healthy snacks every day. Be careful about binge eating, especially what you decide to binge on. I mean, if you decide to binge on, a pound of grapes, one, you're probably going to feel really full and you might even get an upset stomach. But that pound of grapes is not going to affect you like 3 chocolate chip cookies would. So, you have to be careful what you binge on. You want to gain weight to help maintain your supply, but you don't want to overeat. You also want to wait to drink fluids with your meal or after it. If you drink before your meal, you're going to feel full, and that will restrict the calories you take in at the meal. And I'm just talking about mealtime drinking. We all know that you need to stay hydrated while you lactate. You should choose nutrient-dense foods that are high in calories. If you get full quickly, eating foods that are high in calories but still nutritious can help you gain weight. Or you could try drinking a smoothie or a protein shake when you don't feel like eating. If you need to eat but nothing sounds good, a smoothie can be a really good option. That way, you're getting some calories, but you aren't forcing yourself to eat. Plus, smoothies give you an extra boost of vitamins and minerals. You can have an issue not getting enough fat from your diet, so your body uses its resources to produce milk. Normally, half of the fat required is used from the resources and the other half from your diet. And I read some studies, and it said that most healthy lactating women, in order to maintain an abundant milk supply, should take in 1,800 to 2,200 calories per day. Now, earlier I said 1,500 to 1,800. That's the lower end. And consuming less than 1,500, most women should stay at the high end of that range. It can put your milk supply at risk as a sudden drop in caloric intake. And I talked about that earlier. Your baseline need for calories, not including if you're lactating, depends upon your activity level, weight, and nutritional status. A woman who is less active, has more fat stores, and eats foods higher in nutritional value, they may need fewer calories than a woman who is more active and has fewer fat stores and eats more processed foods. Okay, so I'm going to talk about water again, just really briefly, because I still continue to see and hear people say that you have to drink gallons of water while you're lactating, and that's just simply not true, and it drives me batty. I got online to look for more solid information other than me just telling people that you don't have to drink gallons of water. The thing is, you drink to thirst. If you're not thirsty, then don't drink something. But normally women that lactate do get thirsty, especially during sessions or pumping, that kind of instance. But the Institute of Medicine says given the extreme variability in water needs that are not solely based on differences in metabolism, but also in environmental conditions and activity, there is not a single level of water intake that would ensure adequate hydration and optimal health for half of all apparently healthy persons in all environmental conditions. And that just means if somebody lives in New Jersey where it's 75 degrees and I live in Vegas where it's 105 degrees, then I'm probably going to drink more water than the person in New Jersey. You can't say, you know, this is how much water you need, because everybody is different. It is not necessary to force fluids. Drink to satisfy thirst. Your body is, you know, it's going to tell you what you need. If you drink to satisfy thirst, that is sufficient for most of us to stay hydrated. If you pay attention to your body's signals, and yes, women often ignore thirst if there's nothing nearby to drink, which is why you should try to keep a drink near you, where you pump, or at your desk at work, or whatever the case may be. Women who pump may find that they need to pay more attention to remembering to stay hydrated. Here's a few signs that you're not getting enough fluids. Concentrated urine, which is dark and stronger smelling than usual, and constipation. Those are the first two signs of being dehydrated. If your urine is a pale yellow, then you're fine. If you're not thirsty, then you're fine. Unless you're severely dehydrated, drinking extra fluids beyond thirst is not beneficial, may cause discomfort, and does not increase breast milk supply. Nancy Morbacher has a book called Breastfeeding Made Simple that came out in 2010, and she said, contrary to popular belief, drinking more fluids is not associated with greater milk production. In Nutrition During Lactation, that's another of her books, the Institute of Medicine summarized with, it is widely assumed that milk production requires a high fluid intake on the part of, yet evidence suggests that lactating women can tolerate a considerable amount of water restriction and that supplemental fluids have little effect on milk volume. Thirst may sometimes function too slowly to prevent dehydration among women with high fluid losses resulting from exercise or high ambient temperatures experienced by many women without air conditioning in the summer. Thus, careful attention to adequacy of fluid intake is warranted in such situations. But under most conditions, there appears to be no justification for emphasizing high fluid intake as a way to improve milk production. Lactating women are sometimes warned that only water counts when it comes to fluid intake, but that doesn't make any sense. Your body can utilize water from many sources, including vegetables, fruit, soup, fruit and vegetable juices, milk, tea, and other beverages. The foods that you eat accounts for about 1/5 of total fluid intake, and that's also from the Institute of Medicine. Some fluids are certainly more nutritious than others, of course, like a V8. You know, a V8 would be better for you. But even soda will provide fluids you need, although it also provides sugars and caffeine and other stuff you don't need. So that's my pitch on water intake again. Remember, you just have to drink for thirst. Your fluid intake comes from a lot of different sources. Let's talk a little bit about exercise. And contrary to some opinions, working out as a lactating woman does not affect milk supply. It may change the taste of your milk, as shown by studies concerning lactic acid levels in breast milk after vigorous exercises. And there's, I don't know if you guys have ever heard this. My mom told it to me when I was like much younger, when I had small children, that too much exercise, that you shouldn't exercise too much because it makes your milk sour and it won't taste good. Now, as it turns out, there is some truth to that, because studies have shown that lactic acid levels in breast milk are significantly elevated for up to 90 minutes after maximal exercise, which may adversely alter the flavor of your milk. But the good news is that there's no such elevation in lactic acid levels after moderate activity. So as long as you keep your exercise in the 80% of maximal heart rate range, you shouldn't notice a difference. And your breast milk will be as nutritional as ever, even after your workout. Plus, those bonus immune boosters in breast milk don't seem to be altered with moderate exercise either. Another study showed that women who performed moderate aerobic exercise for 30 minutes, 3 times per week, had the same levels of the immune-boosting compounds in breast milk as those who didn't exercise, and not surprisingly, these women exhibited higher levels of cardiovascular fitness. So what are some other lifestyle things that may impact lactation and our breast milk? How about smoking? Because that's a big one. Nicotine is a psychoactive substance in cigarettes and is also one of the most addictive substances and one of the hardest to quit. Lactating women who have previously smoked have asked, "Can I smoke while lactating?" Well, here's what the research tells us. That if you smoke just before a suckling session, nicotine is transmitted to your breast milk. The half-life of nicotine is about an hour and a half, meaning it will still be in your breast milk for at least 3 hours after you smoke, and some nicotine may remain after that. Smoking also inhibits or may inhibit your milk production, and it also reduces the level of vitamin C in your breast milk. If you choose to smoke when you're lactating, wait to have a cigarette until after your suckling session, and then wait at least 3 to 4 hours before suckling again. Smoking is one of the toughest addictions to overcome, but millions of people have eventually been successful in doing so. The time when you are lactating is one of the easiest times to quit because certain substances in your system, prolactin and endogenous opioids, will reduce the withdrawal symptoms. You may also be able to use a nicotine replacement patch for part of the day and remove it 3 to 4 hours before a suckling session. You should talk to your doctor about this option if you don't think you can quit on your own. But what is an alternative to smoking? How about vaping? But is it any better? Nicotine from vape juice can affect your breast milk as it has an adverse impact on the lactation process, just like a cigarette. If you are struggling with sustaining your addiction or quitting, you should at least be using the juice with no nicotine. Remember that anytime a substance is inhaled, the body may have a reaction. Vaping is no different. Remember the first puff on a cigarette, it is not pleasant. The first vape may cause a cough or discomfort, but that quickly passes as smokers switch from smoking to vaping. In addition, the amount of nicotine ingested will directly impact how the body responds to inhalation. In vaping, the sensation of inhaling something is called the throat hit. The sense of inhaling something when vaping comes from the nicotine content, and the combination of vapor and nicotine relates to the sensation when the user inhales. The more nicotine or vapor, the stronger the sensation. When switching to vaping, the sensation of inhaling something is important because it must be satisfying enough to provide the user with a real alternative. So what are some of the benefits of vaping over cigarettes? Well, the main benefit of vaping is avoiding combustion, to quit smoking and switch to a vapor. An e-cigarette or vaping product used correctly avoids the byproducts of combustion found in cigarette smoke. So many smokers have a hard time quitting. Vaping is meant as another option for adult smokers. The risks of vaping are in dispute and being studied. No one claims that vaping is risk-free, but the intent of vaping is not to be risk-free, but rather an alternative to smoking. Nicotine does have other harmful effects. It lowers the levels of the hormone prolactin, which your body releases to stimulate your breast to produce milk. So having nicotine in your bloodstream could affect your milk supply. And if you're trying to quit tobacco, vaping is an effective way to help you with that. But it's always worth discussing alternatives to kicking your nicotine habit with your doctor or healthcare worker. The vaping community boasts a broad base of knowledge about vapor. However, in the current climate, much of the general public holds a negative view of vaping. The U.S. media and public health agencies demonize vapors and vaping constantly. As a result, it is up to vapors to do their part to avoid making others feel uncomfortable about exposure to vape. Here's what an expert says. Family GP Dr. Philippa Kay says that if you're vaping because you've given up smoking normal cigarettes, it is a better option than smoking, but you should still be careful. Vaping is far safer than smoking, and while I can't say it is definitively safe as there isn't enough research, it is likely to be far safer than smoking during breastfeeding. So a couple other lifestyle choices, marijuana and alcohol. Will alcohol be in your breast milk? Yes. Alcohol levels are usually highest in the breast milk 30 to 60 minutes after an alcoholic beverage is consumed, and it can generally be detected in breast milk for about 2 to 3 hours per drink after it's consumed. However, the length of time alcohol can be detected in breast milk will increase the more alcohol you drink. For example, alcohol from one drink can be detected in breast milk for about 2 to 3 hours. Alcohol from two drinks can be detected for about 4 or 5 hours, and alcohol from three drinks can be detected for about 6 to 8 hours, and you get the point. However, blood alcohol levels and the length of time alcohol can be detected in breast milk after drinking will depend on a number of factors, including the amount of alcohol consumed, how fast the alcohol was consumed, whether it is consumed with food, how much you weigh, and how fast alcohol is metabolized in your body. So I hear a lot of people ask, will expressing or pumping breast milk after consuming alcohol reduce the alcohol in the breast milk? And the answer is no. The alcohol level in breast milk is essentially the same as the alcohol level in your bloodstream. Expressing or pumping milk after drinking alcohol and then discarding it, which is called pumping and dumping, does not reduce the amount of alcohol present in your breast milk more quickly. Your alcohol blood level falls over time. The level of alcohol in your breast milk will also decrease. You may choose to express or pump milk after consuming alcohol to ease your physical discomfort if your partner doesn't want the breast milk or to stick with your schedule. But breast milk continues to contain alcohol as long as alcohol is still in your bloodstream. The science says, limited data suggests that drinking even one alcoholic beverage can reduce milk volume by 23%, and drinking two or more alcoholic beverages may inhibit letdown. Now, having said that, I am still an advocate for the occasional beer because of the ingredients that go into making beer. Once a week, I try to drink a Blue Moon. And the science says, several studies have shown that drinking beer can increase levels of the hormone prolactin, which helps in the creation of breast milk. Researchers note that polysaccharides from barley and hops are responsible, so non-alcoholic beer has the same effect. If you don't want the effect of the alcohol, but want to test out the theory, have a non-alcoholic beer instead. So let's move on to marijuana. The main psychoactive component of cannabis is THC, and it's pushed into the breast milk in small quantities. The duration of detection of THC in milk has ranged from 6 days to greater than 6 weeks in various studies. Cannabis can affect serum prolactin variably. It appears not to adversely affect the duration of lactation. THC is very fat soluble and persistent in the body fat of users and slowly released over days to weeks, depending on the extent of use. Studies have shown that acute one-time marijuana smoking suppresses serum concentrations of luteinizing hormone and prolactin in non-pregnant, non-lactating women. The effects of long-term use is unclear, with some studies finding no effect on serum prolactin. However, let me see if I can say this right, hyperprolactinemia, which is a condition in which a person has higher than normal levels of prolactin, has been reported in some chronic cannabis users. As a matter of fact, hyperprolactinemia was reported in a woman who smoked marijuana for over a year. So how long does THC stay in the breast milk? THC has a long half-life, and based on this, it might take 5 to 12 days to completely eliminate it from the body. THC is stored in fat tissue for weeks or months and may accumulate in breast milk. So how long it stays in breast milk will depend on how often it's ingested and your metabolism. Unlike alcohol, which leaves breast milk at the same rate as it leaves the woman's blood system, marijuana can accumulate in breast milk. One report found that there was 8 times as much THC in a woman's milk as there was in her blood. Oh my gosh. There isn't a lot of conclusive research on this particular subject. I did find a lot on how it affects babies that are breastfed by mothers who ingest marijuana, but not a lot on how it affects breast milk or production. I've been known to occasionally enjoy a gummy or two, and when I talked with my partner about it, he said that on nights when I ate a gummy, I had more milk and a better letdown. I can only guess And that is because my body was more relaxed. And trust me, this is not a scientific study, just our observation on how it worked for us. Keep in mind, if you do decide to eat, smoke, or vape, that THC will pass to your partner. And if he works a job where he might be drug tested, be careful. So the last thing I want to talk about is medications that may impact your supply. A lot of times you can't do anything about medications that you have to take. But if you're getting frustrated because you're at a plateau or you're not getting anywhere, it would be good to know that it's a medication, possibly finding a way to work around that instead of being frustrated with your body. Now, before I go any further, I'd like to say that I'm not a doctor, and anything that I tell you is solely based on my research and or personal experience. My suggestions are never meant to diagnose or replace information that your doctor or care provider may give you. Always consult your doctor or healthcare specialist for medical advice in relation to drug use while lactating. Prescribing should be done on a case-by-case basis, and information may not be applicable in every situation. So that's my disclaimer. Many women will need to take medication of some type during lactation, whether it may be short-term for a sore back or a runny nose, or long-term for a chronic condition like high blood pressure. This may raise questions about the safety of common treatments while lactating. Although many drugs are safe to use when you're lactating, most will get into your milk supply to some degree and may even slightly affect your milk supply. To be safe, check with your doctor before taking any kind of over-the-counter medication, herbal or dietary supplement, or vitamin. Even herbal teas may contain ephedra or other harmful ingredients. And remember, just because a label says natural doesn't mean it's always safe. So do all medications pass into breast milk? Almost any drug that's present in your blood will transfer into your breast milk to some extent. Most medications do so at low levels and pose no real risk to your partner. There are exceptions, though, in which a drug can become concentrated in breast milk. As a result, every medication must be considered separately. And most medications are safe to take while lactating, and also the benefit of continuing to take medication for a chronic condition while lactating often outweighs any potential risk. Most of the research that I found addressed the concern of medications with mothers and babies, and very little information on how medications impact breast milk. Specific information from high-quality studies or individual medications in lactation is rarely available, and misinformation, trust me, is everywhere. The National Health and Medical Research Council states, most drugs are not of concern during lactation. Most lactating women take few medicines and then only occasionally. Even though virtually all drugs are transferred into milk, breast milk to some extent, the amount of drug is usually small and unlikely to cause an adverse effect. Now, I did find a couple of things. Sudafed and other OTs that contain sudafedrin can decrease milk supply. If you have to take something for allergies, I really cannot talk today. If you have to take something for allergies, maybe try Claritin or Flonase, the one that you spray up your nose. Estrogen will diminish your milk supply. Remember, estrogen is the hormone that prevents you from lactating when you're pregnant. So if you need a birth control, ask your doctor about something that is progestin only, and that way you don't have to worry about estrogen. The International Breastfeeding Center says most drugs appear in the milk, but usually only in tiny, even minuscule amounts. Your partner is not getting amounts of drug similar to your intake. If you take 300 milligrams of Paxil, your partner only gets 1 milligram. This is good to know because we do have partners to consider. Not all the drug in your blood can get into the milk. Only the drug that is not attached to protein in the blood can get into the milk. From the research I've read, the amount of any medication passed into the breast milk is minuscule and probably harmless to your partner. It's just a good idea to, you know, maybe check with them. What are they taking? What are you taking? And make sure that it's not two things that will interact with each other. Oh my gosh. So that's my conversation for today. I'm sorry that it took so long to get this out to you guys. I apologize. It has been a rough week for me. Oh, shoot. I almost forgot. We have a winner this week. Let's see who it is. So our giveaway winner this week is NettieDeaver at gmail.com. It's NETTIEDEAVER at gmail.com. So that's our winner this week. Don't forget to stop by the website and check out those great sponsors. Thanks for hanging in there with me. And this is the end of our conversation. Have a great night.